now, get up out of bed. Wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes. Hear the words I said. Get up now.
Get up out of bed. You're listening to Because I Said So on Delmarva Public Radio. And we're so thankful that you're joining us. We want to just make you aware that you can weigh in on our Facebook page, on our website, because we want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories and share them with the rest of Delmarva. I'm joined by Kathy, Kim, and Jackie. And our first topic of discussion today is why the French make better parents? Really?
What is up with that?
Bringing Up Bébé. That's the name of the book. And Jackie's reading it right now.
I'm in the middle of reading it, yes. And it's caused this huge media stir. Remember a couple months ago, the Tiger Mother book
Battle Hymn of
came
the Tiger
out,
Mother?
Right, yes. Telling us why we were all bad parents compared to Chinese mothers. And now, apparently, French mothers are much better mothers than we are, too.
Do we need to write a book?
Obviously, we need to write
a book. But as I'm working my way through it, it does have some good observations. So the author's name is Pamela Druckerman, and she is an American journalist, and she has lived in Paris for years and years and years, and started noticing, you know, she took her kids to restaurants, and they were food on the floor and wanted chicken nuggets, and she was looking around at the other kids who were, you know, sitting quietly at the table eating their camembert and
French fries,
foie gras. And, you know, not making a fuss. And then she started looking at, you know, the difference between schools. You know, French schools serve lunches like shredded cabbage salad, and American schools serve school lunches like pizza and chicken nuggets. Right. And so she spent a couple of years making these observations, and she wrote this book. So it's a very interesting.
She was also noticing the playground behavior.
Right. And her big thing is that, you know, parents, American mothers, want their kids to like them and will do, you know, whatever it takes to get their kids to like them. They, you know, French mothers sit on the playground and watch their kids play. American mothers are going down the slide and climbing the monkey bars and, you know, doing all of the American mothers spend all weekend shuttling their kids from soccer to piano to soccer to whatever to soccer to. And French parents don't do that.
We don't know it any other way.
We don't know it any other way.
Wait, so how do French parents do? They hire a chauffeur, or they just don't play sports, or what's the...
I guess the prevailing theme is that you have a kid who fits into your life, not the other way around.
Well, because we're a very child-centered society in the United States, and I'm taking it that they're not.
Well, exactly. And they say, you know, we love our kids just as much as you do, but they don't control our lives.
What does that mean for their children later on?
Yeah, I mean, what's the standard of measurement?
They don't feel like they were deprived. I don't know.
They spend less time in counseling.
They are better adjusted to adult life. They're not demanding. They understand that when a parent says no, it means no. You know, they're not screaming for Cheerios in the middle of the grocery store because they need to eat constantly. They eat three times a day, the end. That French mothers are astounded when they come to an American playground and see mothers carting around little baggies full of
snacks.
Cheerios and snacks and Cheetos and juice boxes. And
it sounds all very snobbish to me.
It does sound snobbish. It's French, after all. The chapters that I've read so far, I'm sorry, Kim, you were going to
just jump in there
and say something.
We haven't always been the way that we are now in American society. We haven't always been this child-centered. It has really come about. So this is really interesting to me.
Yeah, the whole book has been really interesting to me. But you know me, again, I'm the foodie. So I skipped ahead to the food chapters. And this is my favorite line. The reigning view in America seems to be that kids have finicky, limited palates, and that adults who venture beyond grilled cheese do so at their own peril. And I thought, you're right. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had my kids' friends sleep over and their mothers send food.
Yes.
Like, my kid will only eat cherry Pop-Tarts. So I'm sending over cherry Pop-Tarts just to make sure he doesn't starve.
I found my kids to be much more food adventurous when they do go to other places for some reason. And maybe that's just because they're polite, but my son always eats much better when he's over at a friend's house than when he's at home.
And wasn't that the whole fun of spending the night at a friend's house?
Well, it depends on whether they were a good cook or not.
Maybe. So I thought the whole food part was interesting. You know, kids don't eat French fries and hamburgers. They eat whatever their parents eat. So discuss.
Would my kids would starve?
Well, talk about sweeping generalizations. You can't convince me that every kid in France is not eating, you know, is eating what their parents are eating. But I'm sure that culturally there are differences between how American kids are raised and French children are raised. But
I would have to say, as far as, you know, the playground piece, I am the mom going down the slide But that's because who I am. I'm not doing it because I feel like I have to. I'm doing it because I want to interact with my kids. It's really not a drag that I'm like.
And you're still a kid at heart, I think, is what that says too.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I have to get back to the food issue, though, because I see way too many. And it happens in my house, too. And, you know, maybe we've talked about this a little bit. But, you know, I don't like to feel like I'm a short order cook. So we try to have everybody eat the same meal. But I do cater a little bit to what my kids will eat. I'm not going to make fish and, you know, broccoli two times a week because I know my kids don't like it. But I do have friends that their kids will only eat X, Y, and Z. Chicken nuggets, pizza, spaghetti, whatever. And we eat so many processed foods. I think it is unhealthy for us.
Well, it's interesting. I have a son who's 15 and a daughter who's 12, and they are very different in many ways, but one of the ways is food. My daughter is much more adventurous than my son, and I'm not sure really why that is. I mean, they were raised in the same house, cooking the same meals. You know, the first time he put a piece of sushi in his mouth, he literally threw it up. He couldn't wrap his brain around the concept, and so I think it was more of a texture thing, perhaps. I don't know, but, you know, I think kids are different, And I, like you, I don't force them to eat foods that I know they're not going to like. I do encourage them to try new foods, certainly, and try to work around that. I don't know that that's, you know, I guess we'll see what kind
and
of
when
parents
you,
they become.
You ask them to try new foods. I have an interesting story to share because my son, Stephen, who's 8, is the picky eater out of my 2 children. And the one day, it was New Year's Day, we always make pork sauerkraut and mashed potatoes in the crock pot. He's like, I think I want to try the sauerkraut. I'm like, really? Gave him a bite. He liked it.
Yeah.
So it boggled my mind.
But why are you surprised by that?
Because it's sauerkraut.
Yeah, really. Of all things.
Even adults don't really like it.
He starts asking for Brussels sprouts, you'll know something's wrong.
But I do. I think we are doing our children a huge disservice by assuming that they're not going to like sauerkraut. I mean, and not even just for the health benefits of it. I mean, I can't imagine that a diet of chicken nuggets is healthy for anyone, anytime, anyhow. But to deprive them of all of the fantastic foods that are out there because they've decided that all they're going to eat is chicken nuggets is just really sad to me. I mean, if there are 15 different
it's
kinds of apples
it's
out there,
in. Absolutely.
You know, there's got to be one that you like. I think.
Well, I find it interesting that my firstborn is also the picky eater and my secondborn is not. So I think that is
interesting. You learn in a sense where then when Nicholas came along, I introduced other foods to him younger, at a younger age.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
That
maybe,
could be.
Maybe but that explains it.
I really struggle with this because I really want to be more of a health conscious and I want to make my own and not do the prepared dinners all of the time, but it is really hard to find the time, and it is really hard when you do spend the time and your kids do not like it, whether they eat it, try it or not. It's really difficult.
Yeah, that is disappointing.
It is.
Well, it I will is. Say to that.
It is.
Yeah,
because we don't all have all the time in the world when it comes to dinner time, and sometimes convenience outweighs health.
But would you ever let your kids say, you know, I'm not going to eat any, you know, pick a color, flavor, vegetables. I'm never going to eat vegetables.
No.
Okay.
Although, you know, I've said before that the pediatrician told me that so long as your son eats fruit or vegetables, you'll be okay. And he loves fruit, any kind of fruit. So, you know, I, if we're serving broccoli and he can't stand broccoli, I'll cut up an apple and put it on his plate. And I'm giving him what he likes, and maybe that's kowtowing to him. But at the same time, I want him to get the nutrients. So
please weigh in. Tell us what you think. Look the book up. And share your thoughts about maybe why you think French parents aren't better than we are. You're listening to What?
I said oui.
Oui. You're listening to Because I Said So. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Because I Said So. Please join us on our Facebook page. Just type in Because I Said So in your little search box or online at our website, becauseisaidsoradio.com. What do you do in a situation when you hear someone close to you and close to your kids' ears that is basically spouting off curse words, using foul language? They're upset. Do you approach them? Do you say anything? Do you just try and take your kids away from the situation? it's happened probably to every single one of us. And I think that some of us, Kim, you said you had a story to share.
I do. You know, and I think that there are times when people will accidentally say a curse word and we just kind of ignore it. We go on. But I had a situation this past weekend. I was just me and my kids and we were at an event. I'm not going to say where we were. And
I think we can guess.
The people behind us, the lady behind us, it was during an intermission time. And so we stood up and we ended up kind of scooting down one seat. It was an empty seat. Nobody had sat there the whole time. We just scooted down one seat, the three of us. And all of a sudden, she started spouting out curse words, and it was the worst of the worst.
Wow.
And I turned around and I said it politely, "Are you talking to me?" And she said, "No, I'm talking to myself." Well, I knew that that meant she really was talking to me, you know. So I kind of turned around and I said, "I'm sorry, did we do something to offend you?" And she just kind of started again, and I said, "I'm sorry, ma'am, but I have my kids with me." She said, "Well, I'm sure they've heard worse than that."
Ooh, ooh. Wow.
She wanted to rumble.
Apparently, you know, this was a situation you don't run into very often, but I kind of got up with my kids and we walked away, and then anger took over, and I thought, I don't have to move my seat because somebody behind me was rude, so I reported it. And the person came and had a little talk with her, and she did end up apologizing. But what do you do in a situation like that?
And your kids are watching you, too.
Well, right.
They
so what did your
respond.
Kids say?
My kids just looked at me. They really did. And I don't know if they heard everything that I heard, but I was proud that we stayed and that we didn't get run out of our seats. We had really good seats. We did stay and we stuck it out. And she did realize she was wrong. She said she was frustrated about something else that had happened. Somebody had knocked over her drink and she was frustrated, but it was totally inappropriate. It was very rude. I think it did show my kids that this is not acceptable, but you know, you politely can say something and hoping that it turns out in a good way.
I think the outcome was great because she came back and apologized. And then your kids saw you stand up to her and it came out positively.
But you know, if it had been like a big bulky guy, I don't know that I would have said anything. This was a grandmother. So it depends on the situation.
Oh.
She was a grandmother.
Wow.
Well, and I think we're talking about a couple of different things here. I mean, one, when do you feel safe enough about approaching someone who's being
jerk? We are, by the way, we're not experts, so don't go confronting anybody out there.
No. Just because we said so.
No. There's some grandmas packing heat, I'm sure. So.
Right, but I think, but she is right about one thing. Our kids are not immune to foul language. It's everywhere.
Yes.
So
that was almost a case of bullying, too.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. I think that's why we're talking about a couple of different things mm-hmm. here. But, you know, how do you deal with, you know, the 8-year-old who comes home with the word
mm-hmm.
or one of many words?
And they truly don't know what the meanings of these words are. They
sometimes
know that they're bad words.
What about when they're 15 and they do know and they're starting to use it around the house? You know, I'm facing that. You do have to pick your battles with your kids. I do think that I have an expectation that my kids mm-hmm. are going to be polite and they're going to use a vocabulary that, you know, that is respectful and around the house. You know, if I heard him say that out in public, I would react completely differently. Around the house, I do sort of look at him and say, you know, please don't say that in my house. Am I going to ground him for that? Probably not. But, you know, there are times when language, you know, I do occasionally have to admit that I may use an occasional curse word, which, of course, our children are mirrors of us. So, you know, there is that to consider. But certainly, I hope I don't use the curse word when I'm out, you know, at a city council meeting or, you know, any sort of a
sporting event.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Hopefully not.
But
yeah.
I think that's the lesson that you teach your children, that words are words, you know, and yes, some of them have sketchier meanings than others, but there are appropriate situations and there are inappropriate situations. And I do have a problem with the bad words, because I think that makes it taboo, and I think that just makes it all the more interesting
mm-hmm.
to kids. So I really don't want to use the
bad words.
Right, and I think there's some of that with my son. I think he knows if he says that word, he's got my attention.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you don't want to give them that negative attention. But there is a word, I will say, that if someone uses it in my presence, I have to say something about. And I'm not even going to say what that word is.
We know what the word is.
That's the word the grandmother used.
No.
Yes. The word. The worst of the worst.
No, apparently we're talking about different words.
We're making hand signals here.
Now language.
Okay. Anyway, I have a relative who has used an inappropriate word before, and I come out of my skin, and I have said to him, you are not allowed to use that word around my children. You know, that word does not exist, you know, to me, and I do not want that word to exist in my children's world. And unfortunately, it does exist. But that is the one word I will go to battle over. Absolutely.
I agree.
You know, I call them the uninteresting words because, you know, my mom would always say, well, if you have to use those kind of words and you really don't have a very good vocabulary, and when everything is the F-bomb, then nothing's the F-bomb.
True.
And if you use it all the time, you know, I want to tell hopefully my kids, if you're going to swear, make sure you make it count. You know,
yes. I like that.
Great advice.
I do like that a lot.
So when somebody hears it, they realize like, oh, something's up. I mean, if you're always swearing, then you don't have anywhere to go to.
Right.
And I heard that on NPR the other day, a few weeks ago. They were also saying that kids, when they curse online as opposed to offline, they think it doesn't count, like in a text or on Facebook. It's almost like,
right,
it doesn't count.
Right, it's like grammar doesn't count in text either. I find that. I
really
got a problem with that, too.
It carries weight, and I disagree.
But I do think, and I do struggle with it a little bit. And yes, I have been known to occasionally, you know, have something come out of my mouth in front of my kids. But it is just so out there, so we just become immune to it. We don't even, as an adult, sometimes you don't even hear it. It comes over the TV where it's just another piece of, you know, the vocabulary, and we're so immune to it that our kids then, I like what you're saying, Chris, but our kids, it's just become a part of their daily lives, and I do struggle with that.
When my sister's kids were growing up, she instituted the swear jar on the counter at my parents' house so that when my father would use a curse word, you know, the kids were all about that. They would make him pay up and put money into that swear jar. And occasionally, he was so angry, he would say the word and he put the money in himself. Because,
yes,
as Chris says, sometimes there's just...
You got to make it count.
I had a friend of my mother's who was a nurse who, you know, her kids would never swear. But whenever she was doing something, like if she was going to pull a splinter out, she would say, okay, this is going to hurt. So if you want to let a curse word fly, let it fly. And then, you know,
she gave permission.
She gave permission. Like, oh,
well,
you know,
see,
and then the
and
curse
then
word.
It's no fun at all.
No.
Yes.
We actually have a relative, too, that tends to curse in front of the kids because it's kind of part of, you know, just who she is. And they call her out all the time.
Try
and
the swear jar.
I told them, I said, you need to start charging so-and-so 25 cents, 50 cents every time she says, you know, that word. And I think we should do that.
Yeah. I like it.
All right. Working toward the college fund.
Yeah. And again, you know, we are not experts on this, but if you do have a problem, if you think you have a problem with cursing in your house, there you can find lots of information online. But this is from Early Childhood News. And the first thing it says is state your expectations, like draw the line. Mm-hmm. These are acceptable words. These are unacceptable words, so that you're very clear with your kids what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. And then be a good role model, Kathy.
I'll do better.
You brought it up. And then reward the use of good language. I think this speaks to what Chris said. You know, if you do have to use bad words all the time, you don't have a great vocabulary. So let's explore what else you could say.
Maybe instead of the swear jar, you have a jar that rewards them for saying, you know, three-syllable words or something.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Join us online on our website, becauseisaidsoradio.com, and you can find more tips on how to approach these situations with foul language. When we come back on Because I Said So, we're going to talk about the consistent attire program that the Board of Ed here in Wicomico County is considering. You're listening to Because I Said So. Welcome back to Because I Said So. I'm joined by Kathy, Kim, and Jackie, and I'm Jenny. We are talking about consistent attire program that the Board of Ed is considering. This is called CAP, and Kim brought this to our attention. Can you explain a little bit about what they're trying possibly to put up for a vote, Kim?
Sure. Well, the consistent attire program, or what we would think of as a uniform, is being considered in, right now, 11 of Wicomico County's elementary schools. And this was sort of a grassroots a proposal. It came from Prince Street Elementary School parents who asked for uniforms or consistent attire. And that principal, they've put together a committee and they've been looking at what this would look like for their school. And in the meantime, other schools jumped on board and said, hey, we'd like that for our school. And I'm just wondering how you all feel about that. Do you see pros and cons in consistent attire?
Well, I have a question, because the initial parents who maybe approached the principal, why do they want it? What was the purpose?
Well, there is a lot of research that's out there that shows that children wearing consistent attire, it does cut down on teasing. It does. Bullying is reduced. There is research that shows that behavior and discipline problems or discipline referrals are reduced. There could be, obviously the hopes are that there's increased academic achievement. Mm-hmm. So those parents were looking for those answers.
But then also, too, maybe some parents think it'll cut down on costs, as far as there's really no option of buying these high-end brand name clothing for my kids because they can't wear them to school anyway. They just have to wear the same thing.
Specifically, what is it? Is it, is it khakis and a polo shirt, or is it a certain color clothing, or?
I haven't heard. I don't know that those parameters have been ironed out yet, but it would definitely be something like that. Khaki pants or navy blue pants and a certain color shirt.
And I'm curious that this is elementary school. Is elementary school really where we have the dress code issues, if there are issues, and I'm sure there are, in middle school and high school, I would suspect?
I think apparently so. From what I've heard, I did get to go to the last Board of Education meeting, and I heard a lot of parents coming forward and talking about, first of all, I heard a lot of them saying they struggle a lot in the mornings fighting with their children about what to wear. But I did hear a couple
in elementary school.
Well, and I can speak to that. I mean, my kids go to school and wear a uniform, and I struggle with the 7-year-old about what she's going to wear to school in the morning.
That's not going to solve the problem. Yeah. And actually, honestly, I think that's just laziness. Pick it out the night before then. I mean, it's not going to solve your problem.
That's definitely, we actually have one of those, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday sort of shelving things that in an ideal world gets filled up on Sunday so that there's no question about what she's going to wear every day. But
it'd be great if there was enough clean clothing.
Well,
right?
I was going to say, in my ideal world, everything's out of the dryer by Monday morning, but that doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
So
mine's on the kitchen table.
Exactly.
But my kids have gone to both private school where they did have a uniform policy and public school where they don't. And, they were so happy to go to public school where they could, wear whatever they wanted. But I don't know that it changed any of the issues for them dramatically one way or the other. I don't know that we saved any more money by the uniform policy. I don't know. I think it's, I understand it, and if it's parent-driven, then more power to them. I hope that they do do a good enough job of making sure that there's enough parent input. That happens a lot, where not enough parents, are able to give their two cents about it. But how do you feel, Kim?
I personally don't have a stand on it one way or the other. I think my daughter and I will battle wearing a uniform. She definitely is independent, likes to wear her sweatpants, likes to be comfortable. And if she is having to wear khaki pants or something of the sort every day, it's going to be a battle for us in that way. But we can get over that. If it truly shows great benefit to the school for behavior and referral issues, I'm okay with that. And if it truly is an economic savings for families who cannot afford, the name brand clothes and they will see a benefit of it, then I would be supportive. My problem with that is I'm not sure that it is an economic savings. I think when, parents with multiple kids, they have been able to do hand-me-downs. If you have two kids that are now wearing uniforms, you're going to have more of an expense definitely in the outset.
And I'm not sure bullying goes away. I mean, I understand the concept that, kids get picked on if they're not wearing the latest styles, but I think We have to teach our kids to stick up for ourselves. And if it's not the clothes, it's going to be something else. It's going to be the haircut or, you know, the, you know, amount of weight or what they brought in their school lunch. Or, you know, I do think that there are bullying issues that will always be there that we're always going to have to face. And that's a behavioral issue more than anything else.
One of the other things that was brought up, though, that I found very interesting is, you know, Wicomico County, there is some gang activity that's going on here. And the colors that gangs do wear, when you have uniforms, it does make it easier to point out.
There's elementary school gangs?
Well, and, you know, I was just looking it up online just to see what I could see about uniforms. And a big part of it is, you know, to prevent gangs from forming on campus. And if maybe you catch it in elementary school, I don't know. But elementary school does seem really young.
That begs the point then why aren't we doing it in middle school and high school? I mean, you know, why does it end in, I mean, maybe this is a pilot program. And if it works at Prince Street or the 11 schools, then they move forward. I don't know. I think in high school, you know, I guess I have such a different worldview. I don't think about gangs. I think about kids expressing their individuality, whatever that is. In high school, they're all trying to figure out who they are. And, you know, but I guess these are issues that educators have to face. So.
Well, and I think we all know that we're not self-policing like we used to do. And there are clothes that are inappropriate. And, you know, when you get a job, your employer is going to be able to tell you what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. So I don't have a problem with schools setting that parameter.
And they've always had a set of rules about what kids can and cannot wear. I guess
what
this is just taking
t-shirts
to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do dress inappropriately. On Christmas Eve at church, I won't mention the church, I couldn't believe my eyes with the short skirts, the short tight skirts in a church. And it was it wasn't just me. It was several people around me, several family members. We didn't get the memo that it was, you know,
short skirt night.
Dime store whore night, you know. It was Christmas Eve in church. And, you know, it was very inappropriate.
Although there are churches who are marketing themselves as, you know, come in your jeans and your, you know, casual clothes, because it's not about what you wear to church if that's what's keeping you from coming to church.
Well, casual clothes is one thing.
Right.
Short skirts with slits up the back of the pantyhose is totally different. It's a respect thing, I would think.
And, you know, I was surprised. I did hear from a couple of principals, and some of them were talking about the really young kids who are mirroring what their older siblings are wearing, and they are coming to school dressed very inappropriately.
Provocatively. Some girls, some young little girls.
Yeah, I mean, as the mother of a 7-year-old, I do have a hard time buying clothes for my daughter because it's not age appropriate at all anymore. I mean, you have to be, you know, you have to look far and wide for something that, you know, you really want your 7-year-old to wear.
But, you know, we go back to, so the school as parents, I mean, this is another example of the schools having to step in and feed kids breakfast and lunch and tell them what to wear and brush their hair for them when they get there, because I'm sure that isn't brushed either. You know,
You're right, Kathy.
It's frustrating. Really, it's very frustrating.
It does boil down to the parenting. But we're not the parenting experts. We just want to reiterate that. You know, we're sharing our views. We want to hear what you have to say on our Facebook page, Because I Said So. Just search it in the box. And becauseisaidsoradio.com. I think Kim had one more comment to make.
I just wanted to say that the Board of Education is going to be voting on this issue at their March meeting. So weigh in. Let us know how you feel about this and make your voice heard.
That's a great idea. Thanks, Kim, Kathy, Jackie. I'm Jenny. Thank you to Chris. You're listening to Because I Said So. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to Because I Said So, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. For more information, including podcasts of this episode, visit us online at becauseisaidsoradio.com. Thanks to Anita Renfro for allowing us to use her song Momisms as our theme song. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Look for the lady with the red hot lips.
I said so, I said so, I said so, I said so. I'm the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom.